Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today.
This is the ZABEcast, hosted by a Pop-Tart loving kid from the mean streets of McLean, Virginia. And since you probably have other, more important podcasts to waste your time on, screw those AirPods in tight and let's go.
Here we go! Tuesday, March 31st, 2026. It is the final day of March. And get your April Fool's Day pranks and your fake news pranks, always some of the most tedious and annoying of things, get them ready because you got about one day to do it. Welcome aboard, just you and I today, and that's just fine because, oh my God, I've got a lot of great stuff, I got a lot of great audio, and let's be honest, sometimes the guys I have on with me, they may be my friends, my colleagues, and whatnot, I don't need them. Because I get too much I want to say myself. And many of you have said, I love at least one solo ZABEcast a week because, well, this is what you do so well. We like to listen to you. I've had people say, I would listen to you talk about just about anything. And I'm like, that's a really high compliment. But I don't want to just talk about anything. I want to try to talk about stuff that's interesting to me. Because I've said to people who have asked me about getting into the business, doing this, whatever, how do you do it? What are the keys? I said, look, to be in, first of all, no matter who you are, what you talk about, your style, your demeanor, anything else, you have to be interesting. And there's only one way to be interesting. You have to be interested. To be interesting, you must be interested. And you must be curious about stuff and have an open mind and be perceptive and thoughtful and, that's interesting. I did not know that. If you can do that, you'll be interesting whether you're on a podcast or just at a party somewhere if you're talking to somebody about what they do. But that's my little life lesson for you right there. So let's get right to it. We start with Death to Replay. Death to Replay. You know my stance on replay. So when Major League Baseball announced that ABS challenge system was coming to the majors after extensive testing in the minors and testing in spring training last year, I was like, oh boy. Well, another part of our sporting life where this shit is going to be involved. I got to be honest. I am loving it so far because it's playing out in a way that I truly did not expect. Number one, I had not paid attention to just how quick it is. I mean, it is boom, like 15 seconds quick. Secondly, unlike other replay in sports, there is no gray area in balls or strikes. It is very binary. It is purportedly so accurate that guys are getting strike calls when just the tiniest sliver of that baseball nicks the outside box of the strike zone. So it's quick, it's binary, and best of all, it has led to some absolutely electric moments, like on Sunday when noted bad umpire C.B. Buckner was getting dragged by ABS, including this at-bat by Eugenio Suarez, who called back-to-back challenges of Buckner punch-out pitches and won them both. Take a listen to the Reds' hometown announcers and listen to the crowd at the Great American Ballpark.
Cubs runners all hold.
Batter's challenging the pitch.
Turn around. Wait for it.
Powered
here it is.
By T-Mobile. That's out of the zone. The ending continues.
Should have found out the names of these Reds announcers.
ABS could be a lot of fun, Lark.
Okay.
It's amazing how minuscule the misses are, but these guys just know it. Great feel for that strike zone.
It was called strike three, end of inning. Now the 2-2. Called strike three, tap the helmet again. He sends it off the plate away.
Here we go.
Batter's challenging the pitch.
Two in a row.
Outside! The loudest cheers of the game. The Reds have hit two homers. Come on, back-to-back challenges.
The second one by Buckner missed by over an inch, which is a pretty wide miss right there. I believe that is John Sadak, at least if Grok is correct. John Sadak is the lead TV play-by-play voice. And yeah, that was electric. Now, it was a big spot in the game because it was bases loaded, bottom of the sixth. Reds were up 5-3 over the Red Sox. And you had Suarez, one of the best hitters of the plate. And he got saved twice on bad calls that were overturned by ABS. It's hard to be against that. Now, I probably should look here and find out what happened after that in the game. I did not research that, so I'm assuming the Reds ended up winning the game. I know Bill Simmons tweeted that the Red Sox have used all their challenges already, and now C.B. Buckner is running wild like Jason Voorhees in a Halloween movie behind the plate. But yes, this is the one time and the one place that I can get behind replay is right here. Because, like I said, it's quick and it's binary and it is limited. You only get, you know, once you miss on two of these, then you are done. Done for the game. I'm trying to find the score of this. This might have been Saturday, March 28th. See, now I'm obsessed with looking this up. Should have done this before you hit record. It would have been a lot better. Shut your mouth, for God's sakes. But yeah, and C.B. Buckner is in big trouble. Reds won the game 6-5, your final score there. And if I want to go back and look at the box score, see, now I'm sorry about this. I'm going to have to go and get the actual play-by-play of the scoring. Let's go bottom six here. It'll make me feel better that I've at least stitched this up here. Okay, here we go. Suarez struck out looking in the sixth. Oh, here we are. Okay, there you go. Grounded out to second after those two challenges, end of the sixth inning. So, look, Buckner's in trouble. C.B. Buckner may not make it to September, and I'm not being dramatic. Buckner has, for the longest time, been part of the awful trio of Angel Hernandez, Laz Diaz, and C.B. Buckner. And I know those names as notoriously hated umps. As a casual baseball fan, the hardcore guys know them even more. And they are not only bad with their strike zone, they are also very egomaniacal. At least Hernandez was before he was run out of baseball. He retired voluntarily mid-season a couple years back because he was like, I don't need this. I've called enough balls and strikes, I'm out. Buckner is going to be badly exposed. He will not be the only one who is badly exposed. Chris Rose, on his podcast, was talking about how maybe some umpires might start ducking the smoke on even putting on the chest protector and the mask.
Horrible. That can be a word used to describe perhaps the performance of C.B. Buckner. And I hate doing this, but Saturday in Cincinnati, it was rough. veteran umpire had six overturn calls. That included consecutive pitches in an Eugenio Suarez at bat. The second one, Suarez taps his head and Buckner was like, really? You're going to do that to me? This is the first time we're an umpire because you could always hide behind, well, the call stands. Now you can't.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little early to talk about this, but there's a chance we see a couple umpires just say, you know what, this isn't for me anymore. If this
really
can continue to be for CB, if he goes five overturned calls a game, I mean, you can't stay in the game. Like he might ask to not do home plate.
You really think it'll get that bad?
Oh, I think so, yeah. Eventually, Chris, because we saw this, like you mentioned, with Trevor Story and a couple other guys too. Like, what's to stop them from being like, no, you didn't get in time. No, I'm not going to give you that challenge.
So that did happen as well. One of the umpires said, nah, you waited too long. All the catcher did was he had to shift the ball out of his catching glove so he could use his hand to tap his helmet. And the umpire was like, nah, he didn't get in time. It was total bullshit. But they are going to hate being made to look bad because they have never had to face that kind of instant judgment. And then to hear the fans roar in applause.
I think you might see some of that if guys are getting so frustrated. Like, clearly, yeah, that you're trying to do your job. And, you know, getting overturned five times, you saw it wear on him. Alex Cora mentioned it right there. Like, head down. Like, I don't know. I think we might see some guys say, you know what, hand up. I'm not going to be behind the plate anymore.
I don't think you can do that.
I mean, you can. There's no doubt. I'll say right now, there's no doubt we see somebody do that this year.
All right. I don't know who this Trev guy is. He's on the Chris Rose Sports Podcast, which is why it's always important to make sure to font your people or tag them in the post so that when you get this kind of exposure, I give you more credit and I get your name in there. But I'm not going to go look it up. Anyway, I don't know if you can or cannot, as a umpire, decide I don't feel it behind home plate. My feeling is you probably can. Once in a while, you might say my eyes are kind of not really good. They're a little bit fatigued, or my back hurts. Let me go take first base or third base. But if you're consistently tracking when was the last time you were behind home plate, maybe Buckner doesn't get back there. Now, I guarantee you a guy like CB Buckner loves being behind the plate, and he has loved being God back there. Yeah! Yeah! And then ejecting guys. He may not want to go back there. Now, it's not completely unprecedented when it comes to officials or umpires who sort of said, yeah, you know what? I don't need this. Phil Luckett, the infamous crew chief in the Jerome Bettis coin toss fiasco on Thanksgiving Day, where he messed up the coin toss. Although, truth be told, you listen to the enhanced audio of that situation, it was a muddied sort of last-second switch by Bettis that confused old Phil Luckett. Phil Luckett demoted himself from crew chief and made himself a back judge. So it does happen from time to time. But I'm not into this, these poor umpires are going to, it's going to wear on them. It's going to be tough for them to take. No, maybe it'll get you to fucking tighten up your strike zone. Tighten up out there. Tighten up. I think it makes the game better because it adds strategy. There's some in-game excitement. It's quick. And it's going to be fascinating, the data that we now find. They're already, after just 5 days, figuring out who's best at making these challenges. Is it catchers, pitchers, or batters? The catchers have the best percentage right now. Maybe that changes over time. Also, we're going to find out who the best umpires are, the guys who are the least overturned. Also, we're going to find out if guys like Buckner and others improve from April to May, from May to June, and June to July by the end of the year. It's possible the ABS turns CB Buckner into a right, jolly old, fine umpire. I wouldn't count on it, but it's possible. People now are pulling out the old Eric Gregg home plate performance in the 97 NLCS Game 5 Marlins Braves. Levon Hernandez on the mound for the Marlins en route to their Cinderella story World Series championship. And the strike zone back then for Levon was absurd. If they were using the ABS optical sensors on that game, there were calls that were missed a foot or more outside But Eric Gregg, may he rest in peace, by the way, passed away shortly after he stopped retiring, stopped umpiring. He was a heavy fella. Eric Gregg was full on into the hurrah, ringing them up. 94 overturns so far in Major League Baseball. Look out, C.B. Buckner. Look out, Laz Diaz. Angel Hernandez is sitting on a porch somewhere sipping a lemonade with a little bit of Tito's in it. You guys could be next. To the NFL. This story is truly depressing. Headline, NFL gearing up to hire replacement refs as soon as May 1st. What? That's right. The NFL and the owners, these billionaires with their giant fucking yachts and team values that keep going almost straight vertical because these are money printing machines, NFL teams, and they're not making any more of them anytime soon. These guys still hate to pay for anything. The amount of money that the NFL spends on referees is so small as a pie slice of the overall expenditures of the league that if you were to actually put out a pie chart, you couldn't see, I guarantee, you could not see the little slice that says, and this is what we pay the referees. But it doesn't mean the owners don't want to squash them, don't want to strong arm them. They already think they're paying too much as it is. According to reports leaked by the NFL to various insiders, the ref union is being offered a 6.5% raise annually over the term of this new contract. They wanted some extra marketing expenses, which the league is rejecting. While the referees want 10% plus some other extras thrown in there. I mean, what are they going to do? The league learned its lesson from the last time, which is don't wait until the last minute to scramble to get replacement refs once the season has already begun. Get them early, onboard them, and then put the heat on the current referees. But it sucks. It's a willingness to further enshittify your product in a way that is so cheap and so bullying, it's absurd. NFL referees are the best of the best. They do not get them all right. But they have been tasked with something that is impossible, which is to both officiate a super fast-moving game with a ton of violent collisions, and did his toe get down? Did his knee get down? Was his forward momentum stopped? Yada, yada, yada. A rule book that is way too dense, way too arcane in spots. And with the specter of replay, there to overturn them if a single toe or toenail, although why would your toenail be on? If a fingernail grazes a pylon, they could be overturned. It's a tough job. These guys are the best of the best. I don't like all the referees, as you know from You Are Looking Live with me and Scott and Solly, but still, they're really, really good. And the guys who are currently doing D1 football, D2, D3, whatever, they're not as good, because if they were, they'd be in the NFL. And there is no need to do this. Of course, if they end up hiring or onboarding these replacement refs early on May 1st, then any deal struck after that, you know the NFL would tell the referees union, well, you're going to have to pay for all the onboarding costs we had for your would-be replacements. The squeeze is on, and I hate it. Did Dan Hurley headbutt Roger Ayers, maybe the best referee in the college game? There is a Twitter account, by the way, called the Roger Ayers Tracker. Not only is he a very good, very, very respected referee, but he does a ton of games. The reason there's a Roger Ayers Tracker, that's A-Y-E-R-S, Tracker, is that he will sometimes do 5 games and 6 nights in 4 different cities. Like, he is a machine getting from place to place to place to place. But look, he loves refereeing and he's good at it, so fine. After the game, social media was like, hey, wait a minute, what did this lunatic Dan Hurley do when it came to confronting Roger Ayers in a way that looked like he headbutted him? If you watch the video, Hurley kind of without, not a scowl on his face, but just sort of a weird kind of, I don't even know how to describe it, look, lowered the angle of his forehead, and definitely made contact with Ayers as Ayers was coming over to the scorer's table following what would be the game-winning three, but there was still time on the clock. Some people said it absolutely should have been technical. Terry McCauley, NBC's in-house referee, said, quote, under no circumstances should behavior like this go unpenalized, regardless of the sport or game situation. Not unexpected by this coach. Deeply disappointed the official didn't do his job. Well, here was Seth Greenberg saying on ESPN Monday, it was essentially one big fat nothing burger. Okay.
Social media, I know that's where you spend most of your time.
Oh, yeah, a lot of time there.
On the Dan Hurley headbutt of the official.
First of all, you know, when you talk about social media, if you're not going to take advice from someone, why would you listen to what they said on social media?
Now, sometimes they're right.
To the question, but this situation right here. First of all, Roger Ayers is the best official in all of college basketball. He's a tremendous communicator. There isn't, and he ref a ton of my games. There were games where he's put his arm around me, walked me back to my bench. There was times where he said, Seth, that's enough. But that situation right there, that is absolutely nothing. I talked to Roger today. He said, what are you talking about? He literally didn't know what I was talking about. He said, nothing happened. The ball went in. I was running back. They were celebrating. Danny leaned in, said something to me. I said something to him. It was absolutely nothing.
So you're saying that was coach fired up in his own way, in the moment. And
the official interacting with him, which is that guy is the best communicator in all of college basketball as an official. A guy you would want on every single one of your games. Home, road, favored, not favored. And then I spoke to Dan as well.
Yeah.
And Dan said he didn't understand what was going on. He has so much respect for Roger. He's never had a problem with him. Now, he's been walked back like sure. We all have during the course of a game.
Yeah.
But that literally, that was social media trying to create something out of nothing. Because
I'm not so sure.
Because of Dan Hurley's allegedly reputation.
There is no allegedly. Dan Hurley is a borderline psychopath. He's also an outstanding college basketball coach. Really, really good. And he did not say anything to Ayers. Unless he is such a good ventriloquist, you cannot see his lips moving. And he did not lean in to try to hear whatever Ayers might have been telling him, because anyone knows when you're leaning in to listen, you turn your head a little bit and you offer your ear. Hurley went forehead down and with a kind of a weird little shit-eating grin and his jacket half off, initiated forehead-to-forehead contact to the point where Ayers was a little bit taken aback and then diverted himself to go back to the scorer's table as Hurley went back to the bench. It wasn't nothing. I'm not saying it should have been a technical, but you can't just say it was a complete nothing burger. It was weird. Speaking of technicals.
Get it in, they do for Booze.
This is the Duke official radio call. I don't know the announcers. I know I should have looked them up as well, but this is a pretty sad commentary. You talk about a cringe whine after another all-time choke job. This is it.
Get it in. They do for Boozer. Bobbled it. Back for Saar. Needs to get rid of it. Does for Caden. 7 seconds. Trying to throw it ahead. Deflected. Stolen by Connecticut. 2 seconds. It's Mullins up top for the win. Oh, he hit it. With 3/10 of a second to go. Malachi Smith ran off the bench. That should be a technical. But with 3/10 of a second to go, Connecticut has the lead. 73-72. As Connecticut got the three from Mullins after the turnover from Caden Boozer.
Okay. I mean, listen to how excited he got all of a sudden at, wait a minute, they might still give us a chance to win the game because we're Duke.
3/10 of a second to go. Malachi Smith ran off the bench. That should be a technical.
Here's my bigger problem with the call than the cringy, hey, that should be a technical. The call sucked. I know that you're not supposed to be excited, some announcers believe, ever, when your home team loses. But to drain the excitement, and he made it. I'd rather you do the great not Tim Allen, not Bill Allen. Why can I think of his first name right now? Vikings announcer. Oh, brain working is such a hard thing sometimes. On the Favre interception, where he gets more and more outraged. Oh, the humanity is what... Why can I not think of his first name? You right now, you're screaming it into your podcast, right? Allen Vikings announcer. Paul Allen. Oh, I asked Church in Vegas. I goes, so this Paul Allen thing blow over with the paid protesters comment? And he goes, yeah, it has, but it hasn't. I go, what does that mean? He's like, well, he's not going to get fired, but he's now forever labeled as an unbeliever, as an enemy of the state, as an enemy of the cause up there. Yeah. Paul Allen. Paul Allen's calls when the Vikings lost to the Cardinals on the final play of the game on a tiptoe end zone catch and on the Favre interception are the stuff of legend. Just being, oh, and he made it. I mean, that sucks.
Seconds, trying to throw it ahead, deflected, stolen by Connecticut. 2 seconds, it's Mullins up top for the win. Oh, he hit it. With 3/10 of a second to go. Malachi Smith ran off the bench. That should be a technical. But with 3/10 of a second to go, Connecticut has the lead, 73-72.
I mean, you can punch the call up without making it a celebratory type tone for the other team. You can say, oh, and he nailed it. Oh, wow. Duke has let this game and the Final Four slip through their fingers. Oh, the humanity. You can do that. But hey, he's the one calling Duke basketball. I'm the asshole with a podcast. So let me just say that for the record. Oh, yeah, one more thing. Isaiah Evans, who was the closest player to Mullins on that shot, did not have his hands up, did not contest the shot. Now, at first, I'm like, shouldn't you try to contest that shot safely, smartly, without committing a foul, obviously? And then I watched the play again, and I'm like, ah, it was such a scramble. He had kind of turned his head. When he turned it back again and saw that Mullins was out there, it was too late, so it didn't matter. But did you know that Isaiah Evans' Instagram handle is at Get a Hand Up. Get a Hand Up. And there he is, posterized for all eternity without his hand up. Coming up, more on the Tiger non-news. We're at day 4, still no body cam, still no detailed officer account of the accident, still no description of exactly what happened. When will we get it? Who knows, but there is some pushback to the utterly ridiculous take so far. We'll get into that next. You are listening to the Zabecast.
Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today.
We're back. Don't forget, if you want to be a subscriber of this podcast, you can get it without commercial interruption, and you can also get it 5 days a week, not 4. Just go to zabe.com/premium. It's $5 a month, and you can get 12 months for the price of 11 when you sign up a year at a time. And for those who do subscribe, I thank you so much. It's allowed me to not get kicked out of my house during this brief interlude from gainful employment. So, the Tiger pushback has begun. Like I said, no further details yet. I did ask Gronk. I said, hey, Gronk, is it unusual there's no more details in this arrest after 4 days? And the answer was, yeah, it's pretty unusual. Not completely unprecedented, but it's unusual. And there's obviously a lot going on here. Tiger is technically entered into the Masters, although there's no deadline to enter. He's listed as a participant, so he was going to try to play. And he's supposed to be opening up this small municipal course called the Patch that him and his team helped design in conjunction with Augusta National. And he was a couple days away from deciding if he wanted to be the Ryder Cup captain. And he's still on the top board for the PGA Tour, and he's on the TGL thing. He's got a lot going on. Like, in other words, it'd be quite inconvenient to go into rehab right now for opiate addiction, but that's exactly what's necessary. Don't forget, the first crash on Thanksgiving night, they destroyed the security footage from his home. They're like, oh boy, you know, I know there's a Freedom of Information Act, but guess what? It's gone. It's gone. Security footage is gone of him backing down the driveway or peeling down the driveway with Elon allegedly in tow with an 8-iron smashing out the rear window, crashing into the fire hydrant across the street. Second crash in 2017, there was a toxicology report. It was a doozy because he was really fucked up that night, but no DUI because he was not drinking. He ended up pleading guilty to reckless driving and got probation, but not a DUI. Oh yeah, that toxicology report, let me just read this for the record, 2017. On Vicodin, Dilaudid, which is a painkiller, both of those are painkillers, Xanax for anxiety and insomnia, Ambien, sleep medication, and there was traces of THC Delta 9, the active ingredient in marijuana. So he was all zooted up. The third crash, no toxicology, and Tiger didn't answer questions, as I said yesterday. Well, it's all in the police report. No, it's not in the police. Why? How? What do you remember? I'm not talking about it. This is now the fourth crash. We'll see what comes out in the police report. But writers like Ewan Murray in The Guardian has some good paragraphs. He says, American golf executives in their perfectly ironed slacks stood in somber mood as Woods laid bare his personal sins back at the blue-curtained press conference following his serial infidelity. Woods had no need, writes Ewan, he had no need to go into tawdry detail about his antics. The tabloid media had done that for him. Said Tiger, I convinced myself that normal rules don't apply. 16 years since that speech, writes Ewan, it is worth pondering whether much has changed. Two episodes of the past week have exposed the new grim normal for Woods. TGL has become a welcome and fun addition to Woods' sport as an indoor simulator experience, and the world's leading players seem to enjoy it. As Woods appeared, sweating, face bloated on Tuesday night's staging of the Golf League, it was billed astonishingly as a Masters test run. One of the greatest golfers of all time, who would have disregarded indoor golf as a pointless gimmick when in his pomp, was supposedly preparing for the rigors of Augusta National by whacking balls into a giant screen. The coverage was absurd, and I concur. Murray goes on to pretty much eviscerate everyone around him who's been a total enabler, and they're absolutely right about that. Also, there's this, and I didn't think Big Cat had it in him, but God bless him. Big Cat of Barstool had maybe the line of the entire episode when he said this, roasting his fellow Barstooler, Riggs, saying, you goddamn right I did that I said don't text, tweet, blog, or do anything social media about this Tiger crash because we're going to protect him.
First of all, Tiger's a bad guy. Like, you could say it.
Yes.
Yeah, he's good. Doing this.
The serial cheater drunk driver?
Yeah. And then, but Riggs' video, which, can you play Riggs' video? Riggs' put an embargo on any Tiger blogs going up. Tiger Woods, who is probably one of the most well-known guys out there. Riggs told me to not post Tiger DUI, FYI, if anyone wondering why we haven't yet, just letting you know. This is a story that, like, you can't go anywhere without finding out, but Riggs like, hey, we got to protect him on BarstoolSports.com.
That's right. Let's spike that one.
Yeah.
Just go ahead and spike that story.
And the craziest part about this is if Tiger, and I hope he does, if Tiger Woods does get help, Riggs is the very first person that Tiger Woods will have to cut out of his life.
Yeah, he's an enabler.
He's the most enabler you could ever be.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow. Like, if Tiger gets help, he's good. They're going to be like, hey, you got to stop associating with anyone who basically says it's okay that you keep getting behind the wheel of a car, you know, perked out of your head.
Yeah. What relationship do you think Riggs was thinking he was protecting? Like, what future point of access to Tiger Woods, and what value would that be to a fully grown property like Fourplay or Barstool Golf? Would that future mythical, probably is never going to happen now, you think Tiger's going to be like, hey, man, that fourth crash I had where I flipped the car in a broad daylight flat street in Florida at 2 in the afternoon, could have killed a mom and her school kids coming home. Yeah, thanks for getting my back on that. Luckily, I avoided a lot of heat because of you guys. Nobody else really heard about that one, so it's cool. So, yeah, do you want to do an interview? Should I go hit balls with you and Frankie and Trent and yuck it up again? Like, not going to happen. But what a line. If Tiger Woods does get help, Riggs is the first person he's going to have to cut out of his life. And that is so damn true. Got this email from Patrick McNichols in West Allis, Wisconsin. Regarding addiction and Tiger's enablers, writes Patrick. Hi, Zabe. Today's final segment about the latest Tiger crash was the one that really hit home for me, and I wanted to write you to say how much I appreciate the tone of your coverage. Thank God. Not everyone likes my tone all the time. Watch your tone, mister. I am an opiate addict who has been clean for 15 years this September. Patrick, God bless you, my friend. Stay strong. Keep living your best life. I developed the addiction after being assaulted and having to undergo multiple facial reconstruction surgeries. Damn. Without going into all the gory details, it took my entire life falling apart for me to change. This is what Tiger desperately needs, but I fear will not get. You are absolutely spot on when you say he needs to feel some real consequences in order to save his life and that of others, as you and Andy correctly noted. Enablers keep you addicted, plain and simple. You described addiction as insidious, and you could not have picked a better word. The lies and stigma that surround this topic actively keep addicts suffering. If his teammate was a real friend, he'd have the balls to say it on TV. It might nuke his relationship with stoned Tiger, but sober Tiger will look at it differently someday. Anyhow, thanks for reading. I tell you this because I believe accepting who we are and talking about it with others, free of shame, helps folks who are still struggling. My friend Patrick, there is no shame. I admire what you've overcome. I commend you on understanding the complexity of addiction while simultaneously calling out idiots who want to enable it to make a buck. Fuck those guys. Patrick McNichols, West Allis, Wisconsin. Well said, my friend. Jason Ferry in Tampa has a slightly different view. He writes, Zabe, I was interested listening to you and the media in general talk about the situation. I just finished the No Laying Up podcast after yours, and they were so exhausted and disappointed and tired of what Tiger was doing, as if he were their child. This was after listening to you rip Kisner saying, help him. How about having the balls to look into the camera and say, he needs help? Zabe, if you were a dear friend, I would run interference for you in the public space, and I hope I had the courage of the balls, as you say it, to look you in the face privately and tell you you need help. I would not do it on the Golf Channel. Not trying to dunk on you. Seems like most of the golfing public is acting this way. The sense of entitlement in the media is something else. Like these public figures owe you guys something. No, I'm not saying he owes it to me. I'm just saying if you're not willing to call a spade and to plant your flag and risk your relationship with Tiger Woods on television as part of a, listen, the mask is off, the facade is over, I'm going to be honest about what I know. He needs help. I am in desperate fear for his life, and I'm putting it out there. You're not selling him out. You're doing him a favor. You're at least letting it be out there in the bloodstream like, look, there's more important things than whether he's applied to enter for the senior fucking open. That Riggs guy, writes Jason, is a complete douche, but I'm not opposed to his message. Of course, he's already in the so-called tent you described, so maybe he'd be one of those entitled media types if he was on the outside pissing in. He probably would be. Perhaps I'm misguided here. Let me know, Jason Ferry. Look, you're not misguided. You have your opinion. I disagree with it there. Enablers will run interference. Enablers will call things an unfortunate incident and then say, hopefully he can get better and then we can move on. Let's just keep moving on. You know, Kisner does not want to risk his broadcast career by being too strong in his opinion about what Tiger needs, and he would definitely put it in play. I'm not saying he would get fired, but I'm just saying it'd be in play. It would be at risk. His, you know, his spot on the team, the Jupiter Lynx, would be at risk. I did look it up. You know what Jupiter Lynx made as a team this year for simulator golf? A small handful of appearances indoors. Pretty much no travel because they all live in Florida. $4.5 million as a team. Pretty good. Kisner won over $1 million, barely playing on that dumb team. And again, was not going to put that in play. You don't think Kisner knows Tiger has a pill addiction? That's a huge problem. Shit, I just read you the list from 2017 of stuff that he was not having very much success managing. Of course, part of his plea deal, he underwent counseling for how to manage his pain medications. Okay, right. See, the thing is, addiction, especially the power of opiate addiction, does not discriminate. It does not care how much money is in your bank account. It will take you all the way to the grave. Do people not remember names like Michael Jackson, Matthew Perry, Prince, and others? Go look them up. All of them entangled in the web of pain medication addiction. In the case of Michael Jackson, it started from when his hair caught on fire doing the halftime show, or I think the rehearsals for it. Heath Ledger is another guy that had begun with pain addiction. Matthew Perry ultimately died from ketamine, but he was already entangled in various opioids like Vicodin and Oxy. There's no reason why, if this doesn't change, Tiger Woods could end up on the list. And nobody wants him to end up on the list, whether he's a good guy, bad guy, or just a flawed guy. So the time for bullshit is long over. And talking about, well, you know, he's really working hard to come back and sign up for the Senior Open, and let's just hope he can get better and we can all move on. That bullshit's got to end. Oh, yeah, one more question people had, which is, why doesn't he have a driver? I'd have a driver. Well, you would, but you wouldn't. Like, people say I'd love to have a driver when they were commuting to work in horrible traffic in major metro areas. Even if you can afford a driver, nobody wants to have to go, okay, Jerry, you ready? Let's go. I got to go to the CVS to get something. I want to go get a burger. I want to go chip and putt for a little bit at the club. Are you ready? Okay. You can say, well, I want that driver 24/7 sitting in the car while running in my driveway. You still have somebody driving you around. Driving is freedom. And as many people have pointed out, you don't want a driver when you are doing shady shit. Somebody had a great tweet. He's like, yeah, sure, get a driver. How are you going to bang a Perkins waitress in the parking lot in your Range Rover with a 3% tint at 4 a.m. on a Tuesday? Think he wants to get off the golf track after popping 7 Percocets that he keeps in a locker stall and have a dude hear him on Bluetooth having phone sex at 2 p.m. whispering to one of his 47 side pieces, "You just love me because I'm Blasian." Cablanasian. Of course not. But it reminded me of the great Eddie Murphy Raw bit about where are you going to be? I'm going to be where I'm at. This is great.
Ring on this finger? Well, I will. Well, then you don't owe me in, okay? First of all, let me tell you, I don't give a fuck who you are or what you have, okay? You got a whole lot of nerve to come inside and ask me where I'm going. I come and go as I please. I don't answer my father. I ain't going to answer no man either. Ain't no man going to tell me where I can go. I come and go. You got a whole lot of motherfucking nerve. Who the hell do you think you are anyway? Well, come and ask me where I'm going. Nobody owns me. I own myself. I'm my own person. And we hear all that shit?
Okay. But where you going to be?
I'm going to be where I'm at.
I'm going to be at where I'm at. Classic Eddie Murphy, Raw, 1984. If you've never seen the stand-up special that they made into a theatrical release, they released a stand-up routine. That's all it was. Him on a stage in movie theaters. R-rated, obviously. Me and my best buddy growing up, Al Nabassi, from 7900 Stirrup Cup Lane. I was in 7903 on the mean streets of McLean, Virginia. He and I went to that movie together, and we would not stop laughing during, afterwards, and for months. One last thing on Tiger. Now that we've been serious, even if we're going to be serious, we also have to live in the real world and accept the fact that, well, some of the memes are pretty goddamn funny. Somebody photoshopped Tiger's mugshot into a David Byrne from the Talking Heads oversized suit and pulled the infamous line from the great song Once in a Lifetime, which was my theme song for that show that is no longer on 97.3 The Game. You may find yourself behind the wheel of a large automobile.
And you may find yourself in another part of the world. And you may find yourself behind the wheel of a large automobile. And you may find yourself in a beautiful house with a beautiful wife. And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
This is such a great song because of what it has going for it. It's got a great dance track with a very repeatable chorus that keeps it moving, but the contradiction in the song can be described thusly as I looked it up. The iconic music video features Byrne in a stark white room with a floating watery visuals performing jerky trance-like movements that mimic being submerged and resurfacing, reinforcing themes of awakening, drowning in routine, or a baptismal rebirth and transformation. It amplifies the song's sense of disorientation and fleeting awareness. Listeners and critics have layered on additional readings saying it's like a midlife crisis or a psychic meltdown where accumulated success will can often feel alien. How did I get here? This beautiful house, my beautiful wife, how did I get here? Also talking about the futility of resisting time's flow, echoing philosopher Ecclesiastes on reflections on life cycles. Also, it's a subtle celebration of breaking the trance, urging mindfulness amid the same as it ever was repetition in the movie. Ultimately, Byrne presents it as a more observational song than preachy. Life often unfolds without deliberate choice. And rare moments of clarity, such as Once in a Lifetime, prompt the big questions. The song's enduring power comes from its danceable groove contrasting the profound unease in the lyrics, making it both hypnotic and thought-provoking. It's less about nihilism and more about the shock of self-awareness in an otherwise autopilot existence. That, chef's kiss brilliance. Well, look at that. I've hit my mandated 40-minute sized portion of me today. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, drop me a line, zabe@yahoo.com. Better yet, rate and review as it tickles the algorithmic overlords. Tell a friend, subscribe if you want, don't if you don't. I appreciate you listening, at least today. Thanks for listening, and have yourself a great Tuesday, and we will see you next time.
Same as it ever was. 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 Same as it ever was.
Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today.